it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, director Jordan Brady talks about his personal experience overseas documenting the film I Am Battle Comic.
So going into a film without a preconceived idea was like jumping off the storytelling cliff without a narrative net. That is documentary filmmaking. That's the rush. You don't know what's about to happen.
So what happened?
Cut to spring 2016. I jumped at the chance to ride in C-130s base to base to tell jokes to our troops. Before then, the troops were this green and beige camouflage blob of highly energetic people with guns. Suddenly, the troops were now a collection of individual personalities from a wide variety of backgrounds, upbringings, faith. The one common trait that everyone in the military that I met on this trip, that they all shared, these men and women were proud to serve.
Today on Storyworthy, director Jordan Brady talks about meeting, entertaining, and learning about our troops, our soldiers. Stay close.
Hi, I'm Jordan Brady of the film I Am Battle Comic, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
So glad you guys tuned in today, whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 7 years, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with comedian writer Brock Wilbur and his story about his surprise Bosnian brother. And I gotta tell you guys, if you didn't hear it yet, you gotta go back. It's a unique and fantastic story. Basically, Brock's grandmother was watching television and she saw an ad come on to help these folks being bombed in Sarajevo, right? Like a Sally Struthers ad. And she sees a child in the video, and she's so overwhelmed and overtaken with what is going on in this child's life that she tracks him down, and she adopts him. She finds this boy, and this is Brock's brother. Anyway, it's fantastic. You've got to hear it. But not now, you guys. Not now, because today you're tuned into a fabulous episode. I'm here with director Jordan Brady. And, you know, he's been on the show before, so I can say in a way he's been vetted. Do you know what I mean? What I mean is he's going to bring it. That's why he's here. And he brings forth the topic today, soldiers are soldiers. And guess what the story is about? Yes, soldiers. There you go. Now, Jordan recently released his new movie, I Am Battle Comic. And basically, he documents comedians going over to Iraq and Kuwait to entertain our troops who, let's face it, they need entertainment. I mean, I can't imagine living and working in a desert for a war or a cause that maybe, you know, you don't even understand. And then you find out some American comedians are coming to your base to entertain you. You would just be like, you would be so happy. You'd be so excited just to get a taste of America. So anyway, the movie is called I Am Battle Comic, and it is touching and it is interesting, and it's a real behind-the-scenes look at these incredibly brave men and women that are on the front lines fighting for our country. So I knew that Jordan was coming on the show, and I knew he was going to be talking about I Am Battle Comic. And I was interested in thinking about, you know, where the men and women are serving in the world. And as you guys know, I'm sure you know, that there's people everywhere. We've got soldiers in many, many, many countries. It's absolutely fascinating. And so I kind of took a look at it. We've got, of course, the army in all sorts of countries. I mean, from Canada, you know, to Cuba, to Greenland. And then, of course, in Europe, right? We go over to Germany and Italy, the Netherlands, Greece, Hungary, Portugal, Poland. And then in the Pacific Ocean, we've got Australia, Guam, Hawaii. And then you get into Asia, right? So Thailand, Singapore, South Korea, West Asia, North Africa. Now we get into the Middle East, right? So we're talking about Kuwait, Iraq, Bahrain. Is it Bahrain? Bahrain? The United Arab Emirates. We've got Coast Guard in... No, there's no Coast Guard in Egypt. Now, often there's Coast Guard in landlocked countries. You would think, like, why is there Coast Guard in Bahrain? Well, maybe there's coast in Bahrain. I'm not even sure.
It's an island country.
Oh, well, then there should be Coast Guard in Bahrain. I'm glad we're there. But it's interesting. There's Navy in the United Arab Emirates. We've got Coast Guard in Afghanistan. I'm looking at a site that says there are three United States Coast Guard members in Afghanistan. There's 10,000 Army men and women in Afghanistan. There's 232 Navy people in Afghanistan. Marines, over 1,100. Air Force, 2,000. So it's fascinating. Now, check this out. In Djibouti, I don't even know where Djibouti is.
It's right below Jabal's.
I mean, we got 400 Army in Djibouti. Nobody from the Coast Guard's over there. We've got Air Force in Kenya. We've got Air Force in Somalia. We've got Navy in Djibouti. We've just got men, servicemen and women all over the world, and including, of course, here in our own country. And I have to say, I am so impressed by anybody who is willing to give their time to serve our country. And especially when, you know, you go into the armed services and you have no say in what you're fighting for. I guess that would just blow my mind. In other words, it doesn't matter if you like Trump, you don't like Trump, you just have to do what you're told. So I really have such an admiration for people that dedicate their lives to this. And I'm so excited that Jordan made this movie, I Am Battle Comic, because it really gives us a fascinating look up close to who these men and women are and how brave they are. It's just fascinating. All right, you guys, we're going to hear Jordan's story in just a second. But before he comes on, I wanted to ask you guys to head over to my website, storyworthypodcast.com, and join my mailing list. That would be very sweet. And if you really love Storyworthy, and I know you do, never miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts. Plus, if you guys give me a review and you hit the star thing, it really helps me out. Okay, you guys, he's here right now, Jordan Brady. He's a director and a producer and a writer and a storyteller. And some of his movies include I Am Comic, I Am Road Comic, and now I Am Battle Comic. Now, he also directed Dill Scallion, Harold's Bad Day, Waking Up to Reno, The Third Wheel, and Confessions of an American Girl, and the special, 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 which was Maria Bamford's stand-up special, which I so enjoyed. Now, Jordan also teaches a commercial directing boot camp that is extremely popular because Jordan is a commercial director. And, you know, I've done over 100 commercials.
Yeah, we talked about that last time I was on the show.
So I've worked with many commercial directors.
You know what the deal is.
Also, Jordan has a fantastic podcast called Respect the Process, where they chat about commercial filmmaking. And I have to say, if you're in any facet of the entertainment business, you will love this podcast. It's informative and revealing, and it's just, it's about this town. So if you're confused as to what is going on in LA, you're new to LA, you think you're moving to LA, listen to Respect the Process, and you will start getting your head around how things work. You can find Jordan over at jordanbrady.com, and you can find I Am Battle Comic over at iambattlecomic.com, and you can also find Jordan on Twitter at DIR Director, DIR Jordan Brady. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Jordan Brady.
Wow, that was a fabulous intro. I'm flattered and humbled. You know what? The best compliment someone gave me, they called my podcast the Rosetta Stone of filmmaking. Because it's like What a Gaffer Does, there's that episode. This week, it's a DP from Transparent, Jim Frohna. We'll have, I had a makeup artist on last week.
I think that's so smart. Yeah. And there are so many ways and so many different facets to look at. Another good podcast for people that are interested in the Hollywood scene is Barry Katz's podcast.
Oh, yeah, the Industry Standard.
Industry Standard, again. And that's more of the talent side of things. See, now you give more behind the scenes, the filmmaking side.
The filmmaking side, the artisans, the technicians, and the men and women that are the backbone of the industry.
Yeah, and that's more of a puzzle to a lot of people.
It's a niche.
It's a niche, but it's also a little bit more confusing. So it breaks it down.
I hope so.
I mean, a lot of people in the world think that there's an actor and a cameraman and a director, and that's it.
Oh, yeah. The biggest misconception with commercials, and I don't know if we touched on this before, but people think that you write and go shoot your commercial, and then you sell it to, Lando Lakes butter. Like, I made this Lando Lakes butter commercial, and here, you guys want to buy it and put it on TV? And that's just not how it works.
That's not how it works.
Commercials, which I am passionate about, allows me to make these documentaries about comedians. Like, people say, well, who did you go get financing? No, I just pay for it. Not that I'm some Rockefeller, which is an old reference to someone that would be rich. I realize kids, people listening going, what is a Rockefeller?
Was a wealthy person.
It was a wealthy person. But it allows me to make documentaries purely out of passion. Right? There's no committee. There's no... I produce it. I edit it. And that way it's a pure 100% expression of what the story I want to tell.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about soldiers.
Oh, man. So I got a call from Don Barnhart, who's a wonderful comedian and a friend for many years, saying he saw I Am Road Comic. He saw I Am Comic. And he goes, hey, do you want to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and film us doing the comedy shows for the troops? I said, yes. He goes, there's one catch. You have to do like 15 minutes of comedy. And I go, well, why can't I just go with the camera? He goes, no, because then like we can't justify paying your way there. Because, you know, they fly you over there and you get a per diem for, you know, the in-between cities you're at and whatnot. We can't do that. They can't just sanction the filmmaker. So I said, okay. And I put together some jokes. And I went and I opened every show and filmed the whole tour. And it changed my life. So I went over thinking it would just be a documentary about comedians with an interesting backdrop of the soldiers. That's all I knew. And then as you've seen the movie, there's a bit more severity and gravitas to it. There's emotion about what these, like you said in the intro, people sign up. This is an all-volunteer military, right? There's no draft. And they sign up, and once they're in, they sacrifice their personal freedoms to protect ours. Now, I am quite a liberal, right? I'm against the war. I think we're there by mistake and from a couple of administrations ago. But that doesn't change the fact that the men and women are there now. So I wrote this story, and I'll just read it. Before our trip to the Middle East in March 2016, many a stand-up comedian had performed in Iraq during much more violent times, and they all made it back safely. So I wasn't worried about going. Plus, I knew that we had the greatest military force on the planet protecting us everywhere we went. We had the U.S. Army, we had the Marine Corps, we had the Navy, we had the Air Force. My biggest fear about the trip was that I was about to perform new, half-baked comedy bits after a 22-year hiatus from stand-up comedy. So if the jokes fell flat, I knew I could work the crowd, right? Hey, anybody here from out of town? That line absolutely destroyed at Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan. Who's here for the first time? A couple of you? What really preoccupied me before leaving was my film's point of view. So going into a film without a preconceived idea was like jumping off the storytelling cliff without a narrative net. That is documentary filmmaking. That's the rush. You don't know what's about to happen. So let me back up. When I was a young man, I spent the most humid summer of my life, summer of 1983, in the United States Marine Corps Officer Candidate School. Both my dad and my grandpa had served in the Navy. My uncle graduated from West Point. I have cousins that have done two tours of duty in Iraq. So serving our country was more than a way to pay for college. It was a family tradition, although I signed up to pay for college. Officer Candidate School, it's in Quantico, Virginia. It was intense, and I actually graduated the course, but not before the company commander asked me about doing comedy open mic nights on college campus. Now, apparently the government did their research, and I was outed for this. The stoic captain made it abundantly clear that comedy and his Marine Corps were not compatible. So after the course, I heeded his wise words, I dropped out of the university, and I reimbursed the Marine Corps a whopping $912.43 so that I wouldn't have to spend 2 years in the Navy brig for being AWOL. Instead, I toured comedy clubs for the next 15-plus years as a professional stand-up comic. And I talk about a change in direction. That totally changed my life. So cut to spring 2016. I jumped at the chance to ride in C-130s base to base to tell jokes to our troops. And as a comic in remission, this was a dream gig. As a Marine Corps flunky and dropout, my modest contribution to the troops and to support them offered me a little bit of closure. You know, I felt like I could finally pay it back. What I didn't know was that during the day as a battle comic, we would make visits to individual squads and small units, meet and greets, we call them. It was in those visits that I would put a name with a face. So this soldier became Tom from Nebraska. She was Giselle from Alabama. And what a coincidence, Stephen was from Kennewick, Washington, where I had filmed my last documentary, I Am Road Comic, at Small World. He even knew the shitty comedy club, Jack Diddley's, that was in the movie. So a real connection was made with each individual. Even if we all knew that it was temporary, and I could feel a palpable sense of pride, a sense of duty they all shared, and a passionate love of country. Man, that pride was infectious. It continues to this day. Surprisingly, everyone kept thanking us for coming over to visit them. Thanking me? I wasn't the one putting my life on the line. They were. We did 4 or 5 of these unit visits every day. So by the time the show came around that evening, many of the faces in the crowd had become familiar ones. And that just doesn't happen in a comedy club. It became crystal clear to me that our mission was more than providing laughter. It was to bring a little piece of America with us over there. Our visit provided the troops with an escape from the day-to-day dangers, the monotony, the boredom, the loneliness, homesickness, hard work, and yes, even death that they had experienced amongst their friends and fellow troops. That's what our troops experience when they're deployed. So after the first round of these meet and greets, I felt differently about the connotation of even the term troops. Before then, the troops were this green and beige camouflage blob of highly energetic people with guns. Suddenly, the troops were now a collection of individual personalities from a wide variety of backgrounds, upbringings, faith. I met Jewish, Muslim, Christian, gay, white, black, brown, like every color of people that all volunteered to serve. I mean, some were funny, some were serious, some were introverted. The one common trait that everyone in the military that I met on this trip, that they all shared, these men and women were proud to serve. One afternoon in Afghanistan, a well-armed staff sergeant with a thick Texas drawl, he came up to me and the other comedians in the chow hall, and he thanked us for the laughter that we were bringing. And there was more. He said, "Morale is already sky high just by y'all being here, but y'all can't truly understand how y'all are going to save lives tonight." And I looked at him like, did he just say we're going to save lives with our little jokes? "Yeah, these men and women have been out here getting fired at, and some have lost a buddy, and they're missing their families, and some real bad." Then he paused for a beat without a blink. What was he referring to? "Some of these men and women are thinking about, you know, hurting themselves. Some might even be thinking about taking their own life tonight. So that little laughter y'all bring is going to be like a reset button. So thank y'all." And I froze. I'm processing. I'm filming this while he's talking. It's in the movie. I'm processing the gravity of what he just said. It hit me that every man and woman there was a volunteer. Each made a choice to sign up and pledge to the mission to defend our nation. They sacrificed their personal liberties, left their families back in Georgia, back in California, back in Kennewick, Washington, to serve our great nation. Just think about that. Comedian George Lopez is in the movie. He describes the job of doing comedy shows for the military like this. We take them on a virtual, I don't really do an imitation of George Lopez, I'm just going to hint at it. He says, we take them on a virtual reality trip back home to the family, to the different cultures, to the hood, to the food, the stories we all relate to. Then we drop them back off in hell a few hours later. And comedian Tammy Pescatelli, who's done several USO tours, said, "What they give up for us is extraordinary. This soldier missed his wife having their first baby last month while serving. But after I tell my jokes for 2 weeks, I fly home and I go to a Laker game." They're there for a year at least. I spent many nights in my editing suite when I got back, listening to the stories that the comedian shared about these type of connections that they had made with individual soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen. Men and women that had left a lasting imprint on their souls. The stories become more important than the comedy shows themselves. And this was a story that I had to tell. That we had to remember that our troops are over there. So since completing I Am Battle Comic, I've screened the film in 8 cities. And we've donated 100% of the money to various charities supporting the military. And there's so many wonderful charities out there that I couldn't just pick one. So in each city, we would pick a few different ones. And I'm very proud to say we've raised over $26,000. But more importantly, I'm proud that we're raising the awareness to some of the realities of military life overseas and shining a light on the men and women serving our country. So the film has also introduced me to the military community and the great things veterans are doing after their service when they come home. The Hollywood narrative often paints a troubled veteran that can't adjust back home, can't get a job, can't reintegrate to the family, and that is certainly happening. I can't take away from that. Without undermining that dilemma, I feel that scenario is disproportionate to the great accomplishments that I have seen from veterans. So I implore you, the listener, to Google Team Rubicon, who right now was the first responders in Houston. Team USA, or my new personal friend I met through screening the movie, the Green Veteran, who converted a bus to run on vegetable oil and has satellite communications. He joined up with Team Rubicon, and as we speak, he's on his way to Houston. They'll be there for months with chainsaws, just cleaning up so people can get back with their lives. And these are what veterans are doing, using their skill set and applying it in a way that helps. And they get so much out of it themselves by serving. So regardless if you agree or disagree with why the troops are in the Middle East, the fact is they are there now. And most likely you can't go to the Middle East. And honestly, a lot of you can't tell a good joke. But you sure as hell can remember that our all-volunteer armed forces are protecting us 24/7. So I just want to leave you with a quote from General MacArthur. He said, "The soldier above all others prays for peace. For it is the soldier who must suffer and bear the deepest wounds and scars of war."
Wow, that's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So these guys that are coming back over and doing this good work, like the Green Veteran and Team Rubicon and Team USA, are those the ones that you're giving your money to, the money to that you made?
I personally have donated to the Green Veteran. He has a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
That I've tweeted a bunch because I can connect. His name is Gordon Soderbergh. I met him in Detroit when we screened at the Landmark Theater.
Yeah.
And I saw what he's doing with veterans. And he trains veterans to be first responders and disaster relief aides.
So with the 26,000, though, that you know that you've been able to give away, you said you give it to many different organizations. Is that what you're talking about?
That came after the screenings.
I see.
So the charities in L.A., we raised, I think it was like $9,000 of that went to Operation Gratitude.
Amazing.
They pack up care packages. They're working towards their 2 millionth care package.
Beautiful.
To send all around the world.
Yeah.
And they sent some care packages to the first responders and the vets working in, and the military. I mean, the military's now in Houston as well.
Sure.
So Operation Gratitude here in LA sends them care packages worldwide. We raised money for them. I actually donated DVDs of my other two documentaries.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pleasure. It was a true pleasure. And then For Veterans Sake is a smaller charity that I met through Don Barnhart, where this guy Monty goes around and he gives vets suffering with from PTSD, he gives them a therapy dog at no charge.
Beautiful.
To the vet, and he's, they're working wonders. What, you know what, therapy dogs can help a lot of us, right? And then the Semper Fi Fund, which is great. We did one for them. And the last one is near and dear to my heart. The National Military Family Association. Mm-hmm. And comedian Dave Attell, who's in I Am Battle Comic.
Yeah.
So I'm on his website, and I've known him for many years. I see he has a link at the top of his webpage that says National Military Family Association. I'm like, I've never heard of this. And I was about to fly to New York and interview him for the movie, and I click on it, and I find out about this charity. Christine, they send kids to camp where all the kids at the camp have parents or a parent that are serving somewhere around the world.
Sure.
And just because, you know, like if you don't live on base, you may be the only kid at your school who's got a mom in Iraq.
Sure.
And so you spend a month with other kids like that. They help veterans or active duty when they come home. They help the spouses of people serving.
That is so beautiful.
It's such, no, these people are amazing. And, you know, like I said, if I can bring some awareness to these charities, or if your listeners find a local one,
yeah,
in their neighborhood.
Like, it was like after 9/11, a lot of people were donating and people were really aware. I remember personally getting together a care package to send overseas, and we put a bunch of headshots in from all my different friends.
Oh, that's fun.
I had everybody contribute, yeah, like their DVDs or their CDs and whatever they have. And we put together, but that was after 9/11, and then it seems like people kind of forgot.
Right.
So this is beautiful. You're bringing awareness to the, obviously, there's still so many people deployed and so many people need entertainment and need to know that they're remembered by us.
That, right, what you said there is to me the most important thing.
So
I mean, I know they need the DVDs and the distractions,
right.
But it's when they come home. Like, I'm a little older, so when I was a kid and I had uncles going off to Vietnam, as we all know, when people came back from Vietnam, we kind of looked the other way. We were embarrassed that we lost. We didn't know what to say. They were now hippies.
Terrible.
It's terrible. I had a comedian and Vietnam vet stand up at the screening we did for Semper Fi Fund in Phoenix, Arizona. And the crowd gave him a thunderous round of applause. And he said, you know, that's the first time in all these decades that I've ever felt welcomed home.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, this is a huge, broad subject. There's so many ways to go about talking about this whole subject. My first thought after I hear you talking about I Am Battle Comic is, why do you think the United States military doesn't already have a division that entertains people? Like, shouldn't they have, in other words, like when you look at the military, there are cooks and there are, you know, cleaners and there are teachers and there are nurses and doctors and there's every branch of the military. Not everybody looks like a soldier with an AK-47 out to kick some ass. You know, not every soldier's like that. There are all walks of life. So it seems to me that the military should just have a troop that goes around and shares laughter.
The Comedy Corps.
Yeah, like the Robin Williams, you know, I don't know, somebody.
I think the USO, which is a volunteer organization as well, is a nonprofit. The USO and Armed Forces Entertainment, who I went with, is a government service.
So they're
right?
not branches of so the they're military, not branches, but they are right. government funded. But that's a great question. That leads me to my next question. How much does a comic make for an overseas tour?
I think I got a per diem of around $100 a day. Mm-hmm. Which was all spent on the days off in some of the countries. Like, there's a couple of days off, you're in a hotel.
Yeah. What do you do when you're off?
There's a lot of TGI Fridays in Kuwait.
you go to the mall. You do what a comic does. An additional, like,
$2,500? No.
Really?
No. I'm sure that some comics of notable stature get more money. Or country, you know, a lot of country musicians. Some of the wrestlers and MMA fighters did a tour. I'm sure they get a little more than that.
Yeah.
What's great about stand-up comedy, as you know, it's very lo-fi.
Sure.
Like, well, yeah. Even without a microphone, you put a man or a woman with a decent act up on some pallets,
right,
and you've got a show.
Well,
a couple of the shows were like that.
Yeah.
Where we just, there were 25 people, we were in a room, they couldn't make it tonight, so we're going to do some bits
right
now.
Just hang out right here, you guys, gather around. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, storytelling, I think it would go over just as well.
I thought the storytelling actually was better.
Yeah.
My best couple of, like, I'm going to use air quotes, shows.
Yeah.
Were when it was 25 people and we were in some random room and they couldn't make it. So we just started
talking, an
impromptu show.
Now, I know you said you had not done stand-up in a while, 22 years off, but why were you so scared to go up? I mean, I have a feeling that you were more worried about what the comics thought of your material than what the... Because don't you think that the servicemen and women just want a friendly face, a nice story, a good introduction? You didn't need to deliver like Dave Attell.
Yeah, I was never going to deliver like Dave Attell. And you're right that I was worried that, okay, I'm going to be on the road with these guys for a couple of weeks. I don't want to bomb.
Like pressure when you see comics watching you and they're looking at you like, yeah, let me see what you got because I doubt it.
Well, you know, Slade Ham was one of the comedians. He's from Houston, everybody's safe. He has done so many of these tours and he's just a young, handsome guy. He kills, right?
Yeah.
And he's the only one I hadn't met. I knew Jeff Capri that I was with. I knew Bob Kubota. And so I knew they would, like, okay.
Yeah.
They knew, like, oh, he's got some game. But Slade didn't know. We never met. He was the nicest guy from the moment I met him.
Good.
But I could see he was like, okay, what's he going to do? But I disagree. I wanted the troops to laugh. I wanted to also do my part in getting the show off the ground.
Sure.
Right, because since I was the first guy.
Somebody's got to warm it up to make it look like here's what we're doing, this is what you're going to see tonight, and here's how it's all going to go down. Because it is foreign, obviously, for them to, people come through and they don't know what to expect.
Right.
They're not sure.
And they never heard of us.
Did you ever do any stand-up workshops with these guys, or did you ever ask these guys, like, hey, man, anybody out there, you guys want to come up and give us a few words?
Oh, my gosh, that happened in Afghanistan.
It must be fun, right?
It was so fun. A guy comes up. His name was like, he had a stage name, like Chicken Little or something.
Right on.
And he came up, or Chicken Biscuit, that was his name, Chicken Biscuit. And,
I like him.
Hey, I want to go up. And I asked the other guys, and because Don Barnhart not only was the comedian, but he started the battle comic. He takes these tours out.
Wonderful.
Like, Attell has produced tours.
Interesting. I didn't
so
know that.
I said, is it cool? I'll bring this guy up. So I brought, like, to me, that was part of the fun.
Yeah.
And he was terrible. And that made it great. Like, everybody had a good time.
That's
he kept
funny.
Trying. And then a woman came up from the Air Force in the fatigues with her AK-47 or whatever that rifle is. And she was kind of shy. And she said, can I show you guys? I did an open mic at my last base that I was at. And I got it here, a YouTube link. Can I show you guys and give me some pointers?
Aww.
And she was great.
Amazing. And she was good.
So, yeah. And so on base, they will have talent nights and things
nice.
Like that.
Now, when you are at a military base, the diversity of the people, isn't it almost like being at the DMV? I mean, you see everybody.
Yes. And there, like this one young man asked me, he was fascinated with my hair.
Yeah, you do have good hair.
I do have good hair. God has blessed me with good hair. And he was just sort of like slightly effeminate in his talk. So it was like, you have to tell me about this hair.
Yeah.
Well, what do you use? No, seriously. He was at the show like, come on, just tell me. What is it?
Yeah, that's funny.
And so he was different than the stereotypical big guy. I'm in the military.
So let me ask you about that guy that was talking to you, the Texan guy, and thanking about, you know, the fact that you're saving lives tonight. Now, as a filmmaker, as a documentary filmmaker, you're on camera. How do you stay on camera and don't even like move your body like, I understand, or start crying or like have emotion? Like, you have to be so still.
I asked the same question when I watched the news about these heroes pulling people out of the floods.
Right.
What the guy with the camera, should he put the camera down or and lend a hand?
Right.
I think when you're in it, I mean, I gotta be honest. Okay. I mean, I have been.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to start being honest. I'm going to be honest with you. When this guy the staff sergeant was telling us this, and I'm filming, and I'm looking at the monitor, and I try, I'm a one-man crew, right? I have microphones and sound and camera.
Everything.
And so I try to make eye contact, and I try to maintain the shot. I try to do it in a way where I can like be engaged. When he said what he said, in my mind, I'm like, holy shit, this is...
It's gold.
It's documentary gold.
It's gold.
Which is kind of a callous thing to share, like that I'm thinking of the film. I'm selfishly thinking, now I have a movie.
So what do? You just breathe.
You breathe. You keep going. You don't spit out any words to interrupt. You let it go. And, you know, Stacy Peralta, skateboarder turned documentary filmmaker. It does a lot of commercials, too. He did the Dogtown documentary. You would know, right? Mm-hmm. Big time. He said something in an interview where he will just let the silence happen when he's interviewing someone so that both you and the subject can process what is happening.
Yeah.
And I think that was a valuable tool that I had in an arrow in my quiver to just breathe. Don't force it. Let it happen.
It's hard.
And hold the shot. It's, you know, it's kind of the same with actors. You can let the actor have some time in a scene. The actor will bring so much more than just saying the words. So in a real life interview, if you give someone the space, they'll tell you. They'll tell you what you want to hear.
It doesn't surprise me that much that you went overseas, that you took on this, even before Don Barnhart called you. It doesn't surprise me that you did this because you were in the officer candidate school. You did have uncles in the military. No, I'm just saying, you have military around you in your life. So you're aware of it. So the fact that you did I Am Comic and then I Am Road Comic, it's kind of follows suit. I Am Battle Comic.
It's a trilogy.
It is a trilogy. But I mean, comedians, these are different things that they do.
Let me be clear. I never became a full-fledged Marine. I went to this course, you know, officer and a gentleman type thing at Quantico, and I graduated that first course of the program.
Well, most people don't do that.
Well, I mean, I'm glad I did it. It instilled some sort of self-discipline, but and I have the highest respect for all servicemen and women, especially the Marine Corps. And I have friends. The irony is I went back to University of Virginia is where I went to school for a short period of time.
In Richmond.
In Blacksburg.
Mm-hmm.
And I told one of my best friends about the program. I said, the first 6 weeks kicks your ass, and then it's down, it's easy from there. And I'm supposed to go back another summer from now to do a second course to become an officer, to get your bars as a second lieutenant. And my friend Doug, and he goes, this sounds great. And they're paying you for school, and you work in the summer, and it's great. So he signs up. I drop out, and he becomes a tank commander in the first Gulf War and made a career out of being a Marine.
Are you still friends with him?
Occasionally talk. He lives now in San Diego.
Oh, I'd love him to see I Am Battle Comic, right?
I'm going to track him down.
He's got to see that.
Doug, you got to see it.
So comedians like Tammy Pascatelli, is it an addiction for her to keep doing these tours over and over?
Absolutely.
Why? What is she addicted to?
The gratitude that you get and the feeling that you're of service.
Oh, man.
Which I think comes in, you know, I feel lucky, like I've struggled with weed or booze and things like that, but not to the point where I needed to stop and deal with it, right? So I feel fortunate.
Okay.
But I noticed that many of my friends that have gone through some sort of recovery come out of it feeling so wonderful when they are of service to others.
That's so beautiful. Right. So they return. So it's a cyclical thing. There's a name for that. In other words, if you go through an addiction and then you help others that have that same addiction, or if you know, I was in the Peace Corps, and that feeling of giving back getting people to, you know, to see another way, or just to see somebody's eyes light up, that is addictive.
And I think that's what Tammy gets out of it. Bob Kubota, who I've known for many years, a wonderful comic, has done this for over 20 years.
But these guys...
He's gotten letters from parents saying, my son was thinking about... He was writing these letters that were hinting at suicide.
Wow.
And he saw your show, and it just... You know, the endorphins are running through your brain.
But
and
some
your
of these comics have to be getting paid, or they couldn't do it for this long. I mean, they couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, they all come home and do a gig at the Colorado Springs, you know, Funny Farm or whatever it is.
Well, they probably make a lot of really good fans over there. I mean, they create fans. If they have a podcast, they go over there and they pitch. You know, they, obviously they get to see them, and then they show and listen to my podcast or whatever.
Podcasting has definitely, like Slade Ham's credit is a podcast, the Whiskey Brothers podcast he does with his friends out of Houston, and people come up to him and they know the show.
Yeah.
And it's cyclical, it's
reciprocal.
Somewhat reciprocal and cyclical in that he tells them about it when he's over there and they hear about it and then it's kind of passed on.
Well, podcasting, you know, I've got listeners in Korea. I mean, that's fantastic.
There's, shout out, you know, Korea.
There you go. Now, two more things. In the movie I Am Battle Comic, the phone call with your dad is so beautiful. I can't even tell you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Jeff Capri is a second generation comedian. Mm-hmm. So he called his father, comedian Dick Capri.
Right.
Now, Dick Capri used to open for Engelbert Humperdinck. Do you really need the Humperdinck when you say Engelbert? I mean, how many Engelberts are there?
Three. Okay. No, there's only the one. Actually, I met him in an airport once, but okay, go ahead.
Engelbert Humperdinck?
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there. You know,
that's
just,
cool.
It's just, I'm a star fucker. You know that. But anyway, go ahead.
So Jeff Skyped with his dad, who works the Catskills, who did, I think he did like Catskills on Broadway. He's done all those old Comedy Central roasts and Dean Martin roasts before that.
Sure.
So he called, he said, you know, I keep in touch with my dad. And his dad was talking about doing shows in the 60s in Germany for the troops. And it was just, it was so sweet.
That was a beautiful moment.
It's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Why did I think it was your dad? I don't know why I thought that.
But we would have to have a seance to talk to my father.
That was a beautiful moment, though. I loved that. And then another moment that I absolutely adored was at the ending when you, how did you know these soldiers are coming home and they're surprising their families and there's a soldier walking into a restaurant and his wife is there? And I just think about it and I want to cry. I mean, there was just these moments, these soldiers coming home and surprising their loved ones. And I just can't even imagine being there to see that.
I've seen those clips 75 times and I still get goosebumps every time.
So how, what, so tell me how you worked that out as the documentary filmmaker. You talked to these soldiers and you said, when are you coming back? Let me know. I want to shoot you.
I wish I was that clever.
What happened? Okay. How did that?
So spoiler alert, the end of the movie, there is a montage of people coming home. Now, here's a little inside baseball. I just took those clips off YouTube.
Oh my God.
I wasn't there. Those are out there for people to see.
Wow.
But it was almost divine intervention because I didn't have an ending to this movie. It's a bunch of interviews. It's some great footage. I use footage from the television from Al Jazeera, CNN, BBC,
right.
And languages I don't even understand. I would film the news in my hotels to give a timeline for the film. And the villain of the film is global war.
Uh-huh.
Right, Brussels was bombed while I was traveling from Kuwait to Afghanistan, and that changed the world. In Paris, before that, we were still healing from that, and countless bombs in Syria Syria was just starting to make it to the news back home. So, to answer your question, so I'm editing the movie, and it's a good story, and I'm just thinking, but what's the closer?
Yeah.
What will encapsulate what I'm trying to say? And I was surfing the web and I was looking for clues and looking for clips. And I thought, you know what? I'll go to the Veterans Day Parade. So I start Googling. I've never shared this with anybody. I start Googling Veterans Day Parades and I think, okay, it's in September. You know what? I'll just slug something in from last year. So I'm watching all these footage from parades around the country. And I came across this young Marine, a woman, African-American woman, in her dress blues, surprising her mother at like a Chili's.
Right.
And I cried. It was, I mean, the mother freaks out.
I know. I watched
it. Oh, my God. What are you doing? Oh. And they hug and they hug. And you can see tears coming down. And I thought, that is a member of our armed services as much as anybody. And she's so happy to be home. And her mother, so she made it home safe.
Yeah.
And that's what I want people to realize is like, there are people with moms, there are people with kids, and they did this for us.
Because
let's welcome them back.
We see these units and everybody's in the same uniform, and we just see them as these entities, you know, the army, the Marines, the soldiers, and we don't think about them individually. So that's what I Am Battle Comic really shows. It shows individual people who are serving our country, and that is a perfect ending because then they come back, and the idea is that we welcome them and we want them here and we're grateful.
They made it home safe.
Oh, goddamn, makes me cry. And then at the very end, you play America the Beautiful. I think it's on a trumpet or a clarinet. Somebody. It's so beautiful.
It's one of my favorite songs.
The ending credits. Is that a clarinet or a trumpet?
I believe it is a clarinet.
It is so lovely.
I wanted a song that was a Civil War song from, it's called Pretty Sorrow.
Yeah.
Not the Bob Dylan version. There's a Bob Dylan song. I think it's Pretty Sorrow, and it's a Civil War song that was adapted from like an old Irish something song. And it's like singing about my true lover. Will I see you after this war? And I had it for the longest time, and I tried to find the rights, and I couldn't get the rights. So I called the music house, and I said, what do you have that I can afford that is like this song?
Yeah.
And that became the ending. And it was better because it didn't have lyrics, and it didn't distract from what was happening. And even that clip with the woman coming home, the Marine coming home to her mom, I just made it silent, just pulled all the audio after a while because it's just raw emotion.
Oh, my gosh. And
Christine,
it's so beautiful.
I tell you, I'm not that religious, but I don't take credit. I give credit to a higher force. I know this sounds like I'm so full of shit, right? But I'm telling you, the late nights I spent in an edit bay with a finished movie going, it's not done. It needs an ending. I need that thing. I need the candle on the cake.
Yeah.
And finally, I found that clip and went, that's the answer.
Yeah. And then as you start watching the ending as a viewer, I got more and more into it. Like sometimes at the end of the movie, you peter out and you start going to the kitchen, do the dishes or something. But that the ending, I was so drawn to. I mean, I just, tears pouring on my face. Listen, one more thing. We got to wrap it up. Why don't we get into something called I Am Peace Corps Comic?
Oh, that's a great idea.
And we get comedians to go over to where the Peace Corps is serving, because let me tell you something. As a volunteer, man, we're bored out there.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great idea.
Okay.
I Am Peace Comic.
Yeah. You just go over and entertain one Peace Corps volunteer at a time. I think there's 26 volunteers in Tonga. Just go on down there and just, you just do a dozen or so at a time. I don't know if you can go to Djibouti, but, maybe.
I always wondered, you have a boot camp to indoctrinate people into the service.
Yeah.
Why don't they have like an anti-boot camp, like a take off your boot camp?
Well, they might have. I'm sure they do have, assimilation programs that kind of reverse.
Like an astronaut.
Yeah, I think so. You are fun to talk to. Thank you so
thanks
much.
Thanks for tolerating
really. And that. And I love the movie. I Am Battle Thank Comic, you guys. Got to check it out. IAmBattleComic.com. All right, you guys. I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Let Jordan know how much you enjoyed his story and tweet him over there on Twitter at DIR Jordan Brady. And of course, follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. And join us next week on Storyworthy for the always hilarious Tony Tripoli.
Charlie Sheen loves me. He was so nice.
Don't miss Tony Tripoli talking about celebrities next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And again, on behalf of the talented Jordan Brady, thank you so much. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it the Storyworthy Week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.